Hey, what's up, Warrior? It's Jeff Anderson from WarriorLife.com, Warrior Life Academy, and welcome to podcast episode number 411. So recently I was asked to be on the Kill or Be Killed podcast with my friend Damian Ross. I've been friends with Damian for years and years. I've always been a huge fan of his work and over in the self-defense realm there. And with everything heating up, he was getting a lot of questions about survival and how to be prepared, and especially when it comes to defensive measures and things like that. And hey, let's face it, watch the news and you're going to need this stuff more and more, right? Well, I got his permission to go ahead and repost this interview. We got a lot of great comments on it on YouTube and the live stream that we did. So I wanted to make sure I got it out to all of our people as well. So listen in to me and Damian talking about survival strategies. Here you go. Let's talk tactics.
Tactical firearms training, urban survival, close quarters combat. Welcome to the show that helps you better prepare for any threat you may face in your role as a protector and a patriot. This is the Warrior Life Podcast.
And now, the Kill or Be Killed Podcast with Damian Ross, founder and master instructor of the Self-Defense Company.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Damian Ross here on the Kill or Be Killed podcast. And I'm here with my good friend from WarriorLife.com, Jeff Anderson. Shit, Jeff. How you been, man?
It's been buttholes and elbows, it feels like, for about months now. It's been crazy.
So you launched a new platform. So for people who don't know, WarriorLife.com, you know, just explain quickly where I know it's pretty extensive what's on there, but just, you know, what's it all about?
Yeah. So we switched over. We had a magazine before, Modern Combat and Survival, and just kind of out of frustration over a number of years of just like wanting to be more selective with who I'm working with. Mm-hmm. We just, you know, really what I've found in like all the training, different like hats I've worn throughout time and everything. There's this concept of the warrior that's just kind of thrown out there. Like, you know,
right.
The t-shirt, the bumper sticker, like everybody's got warrior, everything, but
I would say warriors used as much as genius.
Yeah,
and epic, right?
Ooh, geniuswarrior.com. I wonder if I have that.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
No, I just, you know, I realized that I think there, you know, there are those of us that really kind of walk the walk, and there are a lot of people that talk the talk. And I was just kind of really tired of talkers. And really started to look at my own life as a protector and with being just a commitment to being self-protected and self-reliant. Like, what does the concept of warrior mean? Like, is it the tattooed, you know, long bearded military right. contractor coming back from Afghanistan? Or is it, you know, I've seen warriors of all different shapes, colors. And I went right. on, my girlfriend did a mud run, like it was a few months back. And, you know, I saw women who, like, obviously they're not living the daily life of a warrior, right? Like, right. they're like, there were women that were, you know, greatly obese, but sure. they were going over, you know, like these nets, like loaded with mud. Yes. They were just like, right. mucked around. And it's just like, you know what? I turned on my, we've got a, you know, our Facebook page, and I turned on the camera, and I was just like, these are fucking warriors.
Right.
Like, even if it's just for a moment of time, like it's something more than just them. Like they stand for something more than themselves. Like they care about something and they're willing to push themselves beyond their norm to be able right. to do right. something that's bigger and better. And so I really started looking at what makes up a warrior, who qualifies. And because, I mean, I know, you know, this, there are a lot of people out there in the tactical world who are more tactical than tactical. And
right.
who don't really walk the walk, but they'll put on the bumper sticker and they'll wear the t-shirt and,
right.
but they don't do anything to back it up. Right. Like that's right. why I call them, like, there's the talkers and there's the walkers. And I don't think it doesn't need to be like just invade your life and just take it over. I'm not talking about like, you're just walking around with your head on a swivel 24 hours a day.
Right.
You got no life. You're just training in the gym and training with your firearm all the time. Like it's just about doing something, just right. something. Just getting off your ass, and just even if it's just 5 minutes of something, and not just getting inside of a forum and just, you know, blasting people who are stupid because they say clip instead of magazine or whatever. Right. It's just, it's like what really makes up that person. And for me, it's the person who's willing to walk the walk and be able to do something on a daily basis, just to be able to do something to make themselves better today, a better protector, better self-reliant than they were yesterday. And to me, those are the people that we really devolve around. And so we built it like it's a lifestyle. It's just like we talk about like concealed carry, like owning a gun isn't like an event. It's a lifestyle. If you're going to get a concealed carry permit, like you carry, it's a lifestyle choice that you're making. And so we kind of look at it the same way. It's, you know, if you really want to call yourself a warrior, well, that means you gotta do something. And it's a lifestyle choice that you make. And it's a commitment that you make to yourself, to your family, to be more self-reliant, to be more self-protected. And so, I mean, that's really what we built it around.
I mean, I think you touch on something which I think is extremely important, and this is where, you know, one of the many places we share when you talk about, you know, people have this concept of having to train all the time and having to spend hours in the gym. And at the end of the day, I think this to most people, that level of commitment is not normal. And they, you know, you're looking at levels of self-protection and self-reliance. It's like, you know, you've got your basic awareness and everyday things, which most everybody can do. And then it depends on how far you want to take this journey. But to your point, a little bit of the right stuff goes a long way,
right?
As opposed to a lot of the wrong stuff.
Now
you had mentioned, so, you know, some of the topics covered, it's pretty extensive what you have in there. You've got survival and self-defense. You've got firearms training. I know you've got, then you've got your bug out bag product, and then you've got your machete. So going back to, let's take it back to the beginning. So you serve in the military. Would you talk about that for a little bit, about your service and how you've kind of evolved into this survival self-defense lifestyle?
Yeah, absolutely. Because that really was kind of the start of it for me. So, I mean, I'm a 10-year Army veteran, light infantry. For the most part, 10th Mountain Division was where I started. It was a pretty hardcore unit. We were the first when they reactivated 10th Mountain Division, we were the first unit in. Spent time in combat, and that was kind of like the big eye-opener for me. There were a number of things. I think because I'm finding more and more of the military training having more of an impact in my life now and what we're putting out from a very specific standpoint. I'll talk about that here in a minute, but really the big surprise for me was my combat time was in like cities, like it was in progressive cities. And so the number one thing that I saw there wasn't really like the enemy and fighting the enemy. It was what happens to everyday average Joes and Janes when supply gets cut off.
Right.
That brought me into like, I mean, I saw the looting, riots, and I'm not talking about like, you know, like we see in the streets now where like a protest turns bad and it becomes, I'm talking about just people like looking to survive because there was no food, there was no water, there was no sanitation.
And it happens really quickly.
Very quickly. Yeah. I mean, it was, so there are the opportunists when there is no rule of law. There are those that will see it as an opportunity and they will stamp on it. And the good people, so to speak, right, will number one, watch that. To see what happens. Like if the police come in or the military comes in and they squash it, it's like, oh, glad I didn't do that. But if they see people getting away with stuff in their mind, they're like, well, if they're taking it, like, that's not fair. Like I'm going to get it too.
Right.
You know where we saw this? This was really interesting. I don't know if you ever caught this, but the Boston marathon bombing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When that was going on, like bombs went off. There were people like, you know, their legs hanging off and the t-shirt tent, where they were selling t-shirts for the Boston Marathon, there were like people in suits. There was an old lady there, like not like a homeless old lady, like just women. And they were just taking like all the t-shirts that they could, like people have like body parts hanging off. But that's the mindset that I saw, was that people will, number one, are opportunistic. But then also when you're talking about survival, that's when things got really, really dicey. And seeing people that were like we were stationed in one part of a city where it was a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And these people knew each other, like they had stores there. It was like they were really right. super sweet people. And then there was a tractor trailer that was there that was just sitting there, like nobody really knew what was inside of it. Mm-hmm. And about the second day after there was no food coming in, water was sketchy, people decided to open that up and they realized that there was food in there. And it was a madhouse. People were beating on each other. They were just trying to get to it. And we ended up having to go in there and loot for them. Like basically we got everybody to back up. We ended up handing out food so that people wouldn't just kill each other over it.
Right.
But that was the stuff that really got me like on the survival side, understanding. I think for me at the time, I wasn't thinking like, oh, wait, I can't wait to tell other people about this survival stuff. It was just observed. But
right.
As I started becoming more like realizing that the government's not going to swoop in and save me during whether it's a natural disaster, which you know I had a small town that went through a deadly flood and you're going to be the savior for your family. You're going to be the hero for your family. You're going to help them survive. And so when I started looking at information online, it was just a bunch of like, wait a minute, that would never work. Like, wait a minute, people don't act like that. Wait a minute. And I just started seeing this like just tactical zombie survival bullshit out there. Right. And it was just, so I was like, no. Like, here's my experience. And here's what I know happens because I've seen it with my own eyes. And here's how you really prepare for it versus, you know, get yourself all adorned in, you know, your sniper gear and your camouflage and go down Main Street with your AR-15 or whatever it is. Like, it's just, that stuff just doesn't work. Like, you're going to get yourself killed. And so that's when we really started putting out like on the survival side of it too.
Right.
So, I mean, and that kind of goes across our whole thing. So it's all like, you know, you can call it reality based or whatever, but you really have to base things on reality, whether it's self-defense to your point and the stuff you talk about or firearms training. There's just so much misinformation out there that people don't know any better are going to take that as either training or what they should be doing. And it's just going to get them in trouble.
So when you evaluate something, when you're looking at something, how do you, what's your checklist of how you go through like, okay, oh, we, you know, cause I'll follow down somebody talking about some, you know, self-defense tactic. And then I'll be like, good, good, good. And also be like, nope, that's shit. And then it just turns to crap. So when you're evaluating these things, what are some of your triggers?
A lot of it's just based upon like personal experience. Like I've trained a lot. So I've gone into situations with realistic training where it, where I've tested what I thought I knew. Right. And a lot of martial artists in quotes have discovered that the hard way, right. They go out there and it's like, they go to get in a fight and they get in their karate stance or whatever. And then all of a sudden they get their ass kicked and they go, wait a minute, that didn't work. Right. And so you start to really like learn, like I always say, like our business was entirely built on failure because I've learned the hard way. Right. I've told this story before, but like, you know, I mean, I was in combat. I was in a hardcore unit in the military. I was in for 10 years. I did a lot of stuff.
Where were you basically? Where were you stationed? Or where? Did you,
I was stationed. I was in. I started off at Fort Drum, New York. Froze my ass off for 3.5 years, and then I was in Panama. I've been in Honduras and Texas. I mean, I've been all over the place. Right. I was in for 10 years there, but. You know, but getting out of that, and then I got married, I had a child, and I was walking home. I worked from home, so I was walking him. Like he was only like 3 years old, I think he was, and we went to the local school. Just, I mean, we're in a nice, like upscale kind of, you know, suburban area outside of Chicago. No crime or anything there, and. I took him to the playground like I did every day after lunch and was walking back along the sidewalk to our house. And he was holding onto my hand and this white van, like this like old panel van, you know, just came screeching up to a halt, like within probably like 15, 20 feet of me. And the side door just slams open. And this guy just like, I remember he was like really grubby, just kind of runs out at me. And it was happening like it was in slow motion, but he just was coming right at me at like breakneck speed. And then he had his hand in his back pocket,
right?
And he pulled out his hand and like he handed me a business card. And I froze. Like it was almost like one sentence. He's just like, just in the neighborhood, just looking for business. If you need your lawn mowed, give us a call. Then they jumped back in the van and they took off. And I remember feeling like shit, the rest of the day and everything, because it was like I've been in combat, like for God's sake, like why would I ever let somebody just jump out of a van when I've got my 3-year-old? I mean, he could have had a taser. He could have had a knife. He could have I would never see my son again. Like what would ever happen to him? And how could that possibly happen? And then I realized that it's not just about the training. It's about how do you support the training in your everyday life? How do you make what you've done practical? Because I think my brain always just took it, that's the battlefield.
Right, you switch it off. Sure, yep.
You switch 100%. It off. And it's not like you can be, because I've done executive protection work too, and that's just, it's mentally draining to try and be 100%. On I did all it the myself. Time.
Yes.
Yeah, it's mentally fatiguing.
Paying attention
is fucking tough. But so how do you I've learned from that example. So just to your point, it's things that I've learned. You know, I have a video that went viral on YouTube like years and years or years ago about why you should never punch in a street fight.
Right.
And I get it. Like some people, people got all uptight about it. Three quarters of the people said, I have no fucking clue what I'm talking about. And the other quarter is like, no, he knows what he's talking about. And I just say it because I carry a gun.
Right.
And I have punched even just a bag in practice and folded my wrist or jammed my thumb or whatever it is, the thing that makes you like, whoa, stop, stop, stop. Oh, damn.
Right.
That doesn't work in a real fight. Like I want to be able to get to my gun. Like my goal, if I'm being attacked, is to get somebody away from me with my hands so that I can use my hands to get 100%. To my gun. 100%. So it's just stuff like that. Like when I look at reality-based, I look at what would work. Now, that being said, if somebody's Taekwondo, double monkey fist back kicks, double somersault, is the one thing that they can pull off in a real fight, who am I to say, you shouldn't do that?
Right.
Like, work it. Like, if you're if you're going to get behind something, test it. Like, not just on a bag, not just on a styrofoam pad, but take the Bob, even if it's the Bob dummy. I've hurt my hand on Bob dummies before. Like, oh shoot, that I don't want to do that anymore. I'm not going to put that in my arsenal anymore.
Right.
So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's really just it's the school of hard knocks, really.
Right. And I think, again, to your point, it's even some of the people, especially that we go through it, I've known some tough, street smart martial artists, that I've know have been in a number of street fights, but and they'll go in and they'll be teaching the same bullshit that, we make fun of. And I'm like, that's never happened to you. Why do you teach it? Well, it's because they teach it. They don't reflect really what they've gone through with, in their own lives against what they're teaching. And I think that's part of what you do is that you're constantly evaluating and reflecting and, putting it up to that litmus test of, does this, will this work and can I do it? And, we talked about this, always looking to simplify. Because again, we talked collecting, little gadgets and crap like that when, at the end of the day, so you've got your bug out bag, right? So what are the essential things? So we talk about gadgets. There's tons of techno gear or whatever bullshit. Guys sell credit card knives and other things and, bunch of shit. So you have your bug out bag. So what are the essentials that you should carry?
It's a long list. I split it up into three different levels. So you've got the must haves, the nice to haves, which is, and it really is based upon the must haves you really absolutely have to have.
Right.
The nice to haves are basically, again, we get into reality here because if you know, if you're overweight, if you're out of shape or whatever, and you think yes. you're going to, like, I see these guys with these gigantic bug out bags.
Right.
Like, we didn't do that. Like, in light infantry in 10th Mountain, man, I was a forward observer. So right. there were times where I was out on my own for up to like a week or so.
Wow.
Just me and my radio telephone operator. And so, like, we had to subsist on that, but you really learn what's important and what's right. not. When you have to, first of all, walk out there, like, we're not getting choppered out there or anything. So we have to right. walk out there, and then you're just there. So food, like, MREs are really heavy. You yeah. see, that's what I'm saying. You see a lot of guys putting like MREs in their bug out bags. And it's like, we didn't even use those in the Army a lot of times. Right. If we did, okay. we stripped them all down, but they're already constituted with water. So we wouldn't, like, water, it's 8 pounds yeah. per gallon. So that, right. that adds up, especially step after step. So so you've got to be able to carry the stuff too. So we have the must-haves, the nice-to-haves, and then the extreme stuff, which is mm-hmm. the things that you can really, like, they're not extremely necessary, but you can, like, extra ammo, things like that you're going to mm-hmm. bring, like the type of weapon that you bring with you, those sorts of things. For me, the biggest part when it comes to like bug out bags, and the reason why, you know, I designed my own was because mm-hmm. I could not find what I knew would actually work in under real conditions, which was something that didn't make me look like a soldier.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, the guys that are out there that, you know, call themselves doomsday preppers or whatever, just call themselves, nobody really calls himself a doomsday prepper, but like call right. themselves preppers, but it makes them feel, more prepared because they look like a soldier. You know, they've got
right.
they've got the camo right. backpack and it's all yes. loaded up, and they've got their AR-15, and it's like, dude, like, street criminals, like, they already know. Like, people have seen enough episodes where they can see, like, oh, that's a person that has food. Shit, right. I don't have any food.
Right.
And he's not really looking right now. And wait, he's sleeping right now. Like,
right.
I've got a Louisville Slugger that will beat yep. that AR-15 any day. And so right. it's just about not, you know, people talk about being gray man, but it's about really like walking that walk. And so ours is not, it's now camoed up. It's, we always say, like, be tactical, but don't look tactical.
Right.
So you don't want to draw attention, but you still want to maintain as much of the operational advantages that you can of tactical gear and things like that mm-hmm. are designed for survival. Like, they're lightweight, they're made for military, but there's ways to do it without looking like you're just out there waiting for the, you know, Mad Max to come up in the Challenger and just, you know, right. for the Interceptor. What was it? The V8 Interceptor?
It was an Interceptor. Yeah. It was an Australian car. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got, still I got waiting problems. For mine. I got yeah. problems. I got problems too. Yeah. So, yeah. So, like, how many, like, typically, like, how many days would you pack for, or would you have it for? And then what are some of those must-haves that you have? Sure. What are some of those must-haves?
So that's a good question. So, the typical, you know, the standard thing that you would pack for is for 3 days.
Right.
And that's really like, that's just kind of a general number. You've got to have a destination. Like, there's more around it, right? Like, that's,
sure, sure.
that's unfortunately another problem, is that people think about the gear only, but they don't think about
where they're going,
plan. Yeah. Like, what is it right. supporting? Like, in fact, I talk a lot about how in the operations order, like in the military, we have a very defined structure for how we plan out a mission. It's an operations order. It's got many parts to it, and it is super, super detailed. And the gear portion, like what you're going to take on the mission, isn't until like way at the end of the operations order.
Right.
Unfortunately, a lot of people put it in the front end.
Right. right. Sure.
A lot of people that are survivalists will like they're doing the gear, rather than the gear supports the plan. What you're right. you have to have a plan first. And so based upon that, 3 days is the typical thing that mm-hmm. you would plan for. And then like the must-haves, I always just tell people, it's basically just like, what do you need to survive? And it's just go back to grade school. We need shelter, we need food, we need water, and we need security. And that's really it.
Right.
So shelter, I don't do tents, I don't do tarps. All we ever used in the military and light infantry was a poncho and a few bungee cords, and that was it.
Right.
That's all I've ever used to this day. I've never used a tent. My kids used to be embarrassed when I went Boy Scout trips with them. Like, everybody else had cool pop-up tents. All the other parents right. did. And I'm like, nope, here's my poncho and my bungee cord. Shut up, Junior. Get in there. And so it's like and then food, you know, there's a lot of ways you could go with food. It is like definitely go lightweight. So things like things that are freeze dried foods. They've gotten a lot more, well, they've gotten more expensive now with the, with some of the increases in prices lately, but pound, you know, ounce for ounce, they're going to be the better options for you. The cheaper way out of that is, you know, like I said, we didn't do MREs a lot in the military, but we brought a lot of ramen out to the field.
Ramen's awesome. It's lightweight, like ramen, just add water.
Yeah, it's just add water.
Right.
The packets have a lot of sodium in it. You're going to lose a lot of electrolytes when you're out in the field. So, I mean, there's been a lot of advances since, you know, these old timers.
Well,
been
the military. they're still like under a buck each.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, really, like 25 cents each for each of those things. And you can carry, like I used to have a video. I took it down because like the video quality was so horrible. It was so old, right. But you know, I showed like canned beans next to MREs, next to ramen noodles, and what 3 days looks like. And it's just not even close. Like three days of ramen noodles is so much more lightweight and things like that. And then I had a bunch of people that were, you know, trolling me on there about like, well, that won't sustain you. It won't, you know, it's made up a bunch of crap and it's just, it's not nutritious. And it's not like, dude, we're talking 3 days. Like we lived on it for like 7 days out in the field at a time. So ask any freaking college kid, like you can go pretty far on
100%.
It's not health food, but you can do it.
Right.
And then water. One of the big things we tell people is that like the survival straws aren't really that good because they're only good for when you're at water. You can kind of bottle up water and then you can use the survival straw inside of it. But the better thing to do is to have some sort of a water bladder with an inline water filter connected to it. That just allows you to like, it doesn't matter what you come up to, as long as there's no petroleum products or anything like that in it. Mm-hmm. Like you can come to a duck pond, like, you know, it just doesn't matter. It can be nasty ass water, but you just put it in there and it'll filter out all that stuff. And then security, we talk about, you do need some way to protect yourself because when it's people fighting for, you know, just for keeping their kids fed or whatever it is, then you've just got to have a sense of security. That's why I say like, you don't want to look tactical because your first element, I mean, in the military, we wore camouflage to blend in.
Right.
Now, you know, you don't have to dress up like a bush, but you know, you just want to blend in with the other people. That's why we tell people like, one of the things is like, if there's no electricity, there's no water and things like that. And so that's one of the things we talk about is the grid going down. Like it's a very real possibility. You know, if you have a generator and like it's pitch black in your neighborhood, except for your house, which is just like a beacon of light, like somebody's got a generator. I wonder if their refrigerator works.
Right.
We've had people that have written to us and said, you're so right. Like the power went out, they went down to the grocery store and they had a generator. And so as everybody was hoarding food, they grabbed ice cream and things like that. And people saw, well, wait a minute, why do you have ice cream? And then, so it made a real problem for this person because it showed everybody around them that they were more prepared than other people were. So same thing with, so when it comes to security, your first line of defense is not being noticed at all. It's not looking tactical, but then you do need some sort of a weapon. Your hands are always going to be, you know, your brain, and your hands are always going to be your first line of, your next line of defense. So you definitely want to, you know, and I think that's a big mistake of a lot of people that are just too gun heavy. You know, what do I need to learn how to fight for? I've got a gun. Not just about AR-15. Yeah, it's not just about AR-15s and sniper rifles. You know, you've got to have other means of security. So,
what would be your prefer? You sound like you're leaning towards, you know, handgun as your concealed weapon.
So, there are different weapons for different. For different things. And most of the time, it's not like, you know, oh, the power's out. Honey, grab the bug out bag. We're heading off into zombie land.
Of course,
like, your house is typically going to be the best place to be until it isn't. And that's what I think another failure of a lot of people that are planning aren't planning for. What do you do if, you know, well, you're just one Molotov cocktail away from, from being homeless and all those sacks of flour are just now gone. So, but when you're at home, you know, we look at it more as like a home defense type of a situation. So that's where something like a rifle, a shotgun, that's going to have better, going to be a better option for you. But like I always look at it as, well, what if I do need to leave? Then I want something that I can hide. So a concealed handgun is going to be the best thing for you. I did a video on this also about a .22 revolver. just a, I've got a Ruger LCR, just 22 revolver that I can carry a shit ton of 22 ammo if I need to. Goes a long way. Nobody's going to want to get shot. Like, I'm not saying it's an elephant killer.
Right.
I'm not saying it's the best man stopper, but nobody wants to get shot. And a lot of times all you need is just like the round to go off and somebody's really going to hightail it out of the area. So I'm not saying it's like the best security item, but it is a good one. Revolvers aren't going to be, you know, like whereas semi-automatics, if you're in an extended period where it's inclement weather, then, you know, you might have rusting, you might have debris, things that it's not as reliable as like a revolver. And so you can carry a lot of ammunition. There's just a lot of things you can do with that. It's also transferable. So I do carry a an AR pistol. Like I have other options that I, that I carry with me. It's not inside of my bag. Like we design, that's one of the other things about our XBOB is like we design other components of it. So it has like a concealed rifle bag in it, or you can conceal other handguns in it as well. And it basically, you don't see it from the outside, but it's got a quick release. Like you just pull this thing out, it opens up and then you can get to it. So an AR pistol that's chambered in like 5.56, 223. But also what I carry with me is a 22 adapter bolt for it. So I can quickly, I can go from 5.56, pull it out, throw it in. Now I've got like 22 rounds. I can load up on those. And so it gives me lots of different options. So that allows me to, if I want to hunt without as much of a register as like a 22, I mean, a 223, I can do that. Like it just gives me more options. And that's what we really look at is like giving yourself as many options as possible. I mean, the military doesn't use 22. So like if somebody wants to go with 9mm, it's a NATO round.
Right.
So I always look at, you know, if I don't have ammunition for my firearm, it's just a big giant paperweight. It's a club.
Right.
You know? So,
So
I look at where, if I need to get ammo, what am I going to be able to get to? I know I'm going to be able to get to most likely NATO rounds. So 5.56, 9mm, 7.62. So I'm going to go with things that I can use there, but the 22, I can carry a lot of it. So, and it's relatively inexpensive. I can stockpile it in different areas, things like that. So,
Now, you mentioned, so the backup, so we talked a little bit about the machete that you developed, which again, you're, I know you're a huge proponent of that. What was the evolution of that? And what, you know, why a machete?
Yeah. The evolution of that was combat. It was just, freaking, I know what it's like to be out there and running out of ammo. And, it's like, you know, you don't go back to the, you know, to the little tent, you know, like next to the lemonade stand. They're like, all right, I'm here for my next round of ammo. Like when you're out there and there's bullets flying, you're, that's why I was so glad. Like when I first went in the military, we were still on full auto with M16s. And then they switched over to 3-round burst. And it's like, that's another example of what I see out there is like people that just want like, oh, I can turn my rifle into full auto. And it's like,
yeah, I don't know why you would do that.
So, so it was really like realizing that, holy shit, if I run out of ammo, like my ass, like I'm huddled behind something trying to like just not get shot at that point. That's not a good place to be. So, so I realized that, okay, I needed a backup and I wasn't issued a handgun. It's not like you take our own stuff in there. So I didn't have a handgun with me or anything like that. And if I take, and that's another thing, I don't, if I take my, you know, one of my partner's ammo, Now they have less ammo. So I always look at it from that standpoint. So for me, it was like, what was my best backup if I completely ran out of ammo? I wasn't going to fix bayonets. I wasn't going to use my knife. And so the best thing I had was my military issue machete. And so I took that with me. And then I realized how important that was. And I've carried that through. And it's like, okay, well, if I'm going to be good with a handgun, I better learn how to use it. If I'm going to be good with my hands, I better train how to use them. If I'm going to be good with a machete, I better train how to use this thing. And I realized that there were different, like the machete is in some countries, the way that you end arguments. You go down to Central America, you go down to, like I was in Panama and, you know, in Honduras, in Mexico. And it's like sometimes it's like, they're not like breaking out the guns. A lot of those places, they're not allowed to have them and they don't carry around with them.
But
the first thing they're going for is a machete. when they mean business. And so I took that as, okay, well, I'm going to go, like, I'm going to let the natives like tell me of what's the most important thing. And so I started training in Indian Gutkha. Mm-hmm. And then I teamed up with a guy that studied African and Haitian machete fighting. And so we kind of like spent a couple of years just developing, like taking the best of each of them and just developing a real system around how to fight with a machete. And then we did develop the machete out of it. So we built a kind of a machete fighting system. And then there's the our machete, which will cut through, it'll hack through solid steel, like not solid steel, but like a truck hood. Wow. And it won't even like damage the blade. Like I would buy machetes on the market from big name brands. I love Sprague's knives. Like I love their knives. I bought their machete and like took one hack at a car hood and it just bent the whole thing. Other ones just break. I mean, it's just like, this ain't going to cut it for me. So we set up, my son was into blacksmithing and we really looked at metals and different things like that. And we came up with a design and came up with the machete and that really, it's a lot heavier than other machetes.
I would imagine. Yeah,
it is. But sure. The benefit of it though, is that using the system, it's a very, like the Gutkha system uses, it's not like you're rearing back and you're hacking like you would normally use. It goes around your body. So there's a way you're kind of using the centrifugal force where you can do it very quickly, but it also gains a lot of momentum and it also masks where you're going to strike somebody. So there's a lot of different benefits to it, but the weight of our machete works to your benefit by the way that we end up using it in the system too. So they kind of go hand in hand.
So sounds familiar to like a Kukri.
No, it's not
at all.
It's a Bolo style. It's a Bolo style machete. It has the standard like 18-inch blade on it,
all right,
which is the same as like the military machete.
Okay.
But the problem that we found with Kukri is like it has a lot of power because of its the angle of it. Mm-hmm. But it also doesn't go through. So, yes, you're going to like hack into somebody. But the Gutkha fighting system was designed for multiple attackers. And it was designed to be used two swords or two machetes at a time.
Sure.
And there's a very specific move where it creates this 360 degree, like basically turns you into a human like ninja blender. Like it just, it just like there's the blade, both the blades go in front and back and the side all at the same time. And so it's designed for multiple attackers. It's been used in multiple attacks in India where there was political unrest. The Sikhs were the ones that developed the system. Mm-hmm. And during the, when Indira Gandhi was assassinated and it was the two Sikh bodyguards that were a part of it. Like there was just, okay, kill all Sikhs. And like the streets were just like anybody that was a Sikh, they were just, people were killing them. And so there's an 80-year-old guy that they found, the police showed up and there was just like 100 bodies lying around him. And it was just one guy and his swords. And it's like, that's what the system was designed for, was for multiple attackers. And Kukri doesn't, like, it stops too much. Like it provides a lot of power, but it'll stick in like the bone or wherever you're doing. It's made for like hacking like that.
Yeah.
And it is made for combat. Like, you know, you can't argue with the Kukri warriors. I mean, they were badasses, but it's just a different type of a system. So ours is made to kind of like go through and continue the battle after that.
One of the things that always, you know, it's funny because like we as, you know, combative students, if you will, seeking the truth in training. And you talk about the locals with their machetes and how good they get at it using it. Well, it's like when you use it for everything, you know, when you're chopping cane, you know, vegetation, and it's just by your side and you're living with this thing. Yeah, man, you know, you chop thousands of times.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be pretty freaking good at it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and so we'll have links to both the bug out bag and the machete in the description for people who want to check it out for Jeff's stuff. Now, one of the things I wanted to touch on too is your vehicle. So it's like time to bug out. right? I mean, the house is burning. Got the bag. Got the obviously again when we're planning, you know, these things as you'll talk about in your programs. It's like, look, I've got three people I got to feed for 3 days, right? Things like that, and this is where we're going. You've got a plan mapped out. You know, I noticed a couple times, but the last time is when we had Hurricane Sandy, and you talk about people get feral very quickly.
Very quickly, yeah.
And when there's no line at the gas, my mom at the time was like 80 years old, and she's like getting in arguments with people on the gas line.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you doing? I wasn't there. She's telling me about it. I mean, but this is my mom, literally little old lady. She's all like, you know, not even 5 feet anymore, you know, getting brazen enough because it turns out to be more than just gas. It's like this gas means survival. And again, this was like 3 days of shit that people just, it broke down and we could still get food. Now, back to my original point, so you know, how, like a vehicle, so you know, what types of things, you know, would you have in your vehicle, and you know, how would you stage it, especially I know that's going to depend on your area a bit. If you don't have a lot of trees, you don't necessarily have to have a chainsaw. Yeah. But you know, like for me, it'll be, you know, extra gas, axe, chainsaw, you know, things like that. I don't know if you want to touch on that a little bit.
Sure. So it's a really good topic because again, I mean, and I think anybody that's listening will start this. What I really try to do is just challenge people to use, going back to your original point, like, how do you know what's realistic and what's not, right? Like a lot of it just comes down to common sense, but people don't typically question what they read or what they're taught or what this guy from Iraq said or, you know, whatever. Right. And so, when you really start to look at it, like all your vehicle needs to do is get you from point A to point B,
right,
as fast as possible, right? So one thing is taking fast, decisive action on getting out of Dodge. If like you got to know what your triggers are, so mm-hmm. and that depends upon the planning that you do in your area and things like that. So if you get on the road early enough, if you think like your area could become a problem, or if they might call for evacuation, but they're not really sure or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, don't wait for that because everybody else is going to wait for it. And right. You want to be ahead of that. So at that point, a Volkswagen Bug, it doesn't matter. Like, just get on the road and just go. However,
Great point.
You have to start to look at also what's the worst case scenarios. Like if you don't get on time or it's a wildfire that, you know, all of a sudden sprung up overnight. Now you're trying, right. You're trying to get out. So then we start looking at like what obstacles would there be in your way. The most common one is going to be traffic, of course. Mm-hmm. So knowing what your routes are, having multiple routes planned out, knowing where you're going to. But then we start to look at like kind of more of the extreme things. So you're going to need fuel. And I've been in like locations where there was no fuel and I was on empty. And so it's like, okay, well, what would you do when you start, you know, kind of a game playing this about like, what would I do if, like, people need to stop planning for the best case scenario. You right. start planning for the worst case scenario, and that's what gives you confidence. So I always tell people, like, having the ability to carry fuel with you. So, you know, I've got two 14-gallon tanks that I have that go on top of my car. And again, camouflage. Like, they go, for me, I've got a you know, where the luggage holders, canvas, it goes on top.
Yeah.
They go inside of there because the reason why traffic backs up is because people run out of gas and they break down. And if everyone's been on the highway, just like trying to press it, you're not over on the shoulder. Like you're just like, you're in the middle lane. And all of a sudden, if it goes poof, it's like, oops. Then you're trying to get over to the side of the road. But if there's already a bunch of people there already, like you're not getting over there. Now you're in the middle. Now you've stopped up traffic, right? So the people that are out of gas, they see these giant red, you know, fuel cans on top of your truck.
Right.
And you're like going at a snail's pace, like, hey, I need some fuel. Can you give me some fuel? And what we always say is like, people are going to ask. They're going to ask. If they see you have food, if they see you look clean and they're dirty, you smell like soap and they smell like funk. Like you got something that they need.
Right.
And so they're going to ask. And when you say no, they're going to beg. And when you say no again, some of them are going to demand.
Yep.
And if you say no, then some of them are just going to take, and potentially by force. And so, so you've got to, again, you got to like blend in as much as you can. So fuel is one thing. So carry it how much you can, have the ability to get it if you aren't bringing it. So having a siphon that you can bring with you, you know, use car lots, there's new car lots. Have one that's a newer version that goes through like those tanks. Like there's, you know, it's not like the old days, you stick a garden hose down the tank
and suck it.
Not like the good old days when we used to steal our gas, but so fuel is a huge thing, especially if the grid goes down, there is no more fuel tanks.
Right.
Like that's it. So that's one thing. Also, any obstacles. So if you do have to get around, can you go off road? Now I've shown how I used to have a Mini Cooper.
Yeah.
And I showed, okay, well, you work with what you've got. I'm not saying you need to go out and buy a monster truck, you know, to get up to your remote bunker in the woods, but like you do need to have a way that you can, if you do need to go on the shoulder of the road, if you get stuck, how are you going to get out? So something that you can, anybody that's lived up north, like I'm from New York, I know you're up north also. So like you get stuck, you need something to put underneath the tires, things like that. You can improvise things like, you know, floor mats and things like that, but there are some simple things that you can add to your vehicle that is going to help you. Extra fluids, like, you know, your vehicle, just keep it in, you know, good working condition, things like that. But that's what I look at is, and to your point also, I think, I forgot what it was you said earlier, but, not like you're going to bring a chainsaw with you.
Right. Well,
you could.
I do.
But one thing I do carry with me, and this is kind of like you got to be careful with this also, is heavy bolt cutters.
Yes.
And because, you know, I like to learn from other people's mistakes more than I like to learn from mine. And so one of the, we just did the half day workshop on exactly like this topic, like how do you plan for evacuation? And the example that I gave at the beginning was a guy that during the wildfires a few years ago, they were back in a remote part of the mountain, fire got up there. He got a bunch of people together. They took their sweet ass time. Now, like the fire's coming up around them. They finally are getting to the edge and they reach a fence and it has a padlock on it.
Right.
And they like, oh shit. Like,
yeah, it's a great, great point, man.
They all died except for the guy that was leading them out. And I have the video. They took it down. I managed to get the video before they took it off the internet. But I mean, there's skeletons in the cars. They all just got burned to ashes because they didn't have a bolt cutter. So that's what I look at. If I can go off road where everybody else is on road, if I can take trails, all of a sudden, oops, private land, you know, and there's a big ass gate and it's got a padlock on it. Nope. Yep. See ya. Going right through.
That's great. So, I'm adding that. Yeah. Brilliant.
Like, but the reason I say you got to be careful is because if you're caught with them, like if you get pulled over by police and they see them, things like that, then it can open you up to, well, why do you have that? So that's what we look at. Like, I don't think you can buy like big, I'm trying to think of, like I know in some places you can't buy bolt cutters because it's not like they're illegal, but like you have to have a reason for having them. So if you're a janitor or whatever, so I keep them like hidden. I don't keep them like on top of my, my vehicle or anything like that.
Well, again, to your point, I mean, these things are hidden and covered. They're not in plain view. I mean, you're not drawing attention to yourself. I mean, my bug out vehicle is a jacked up Jeep, but still it's, you know, it looks like it's just something you would off road with. So you expect to kind of see winches and crap like that on it.
Yeah.
The bolt cutter thing is being added to the bag that gets thrown in the back where we go. So like given everything that's going on today, what is concerning you the most, you know, from your vantage point?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that keeps me up at night. But there's some, but you know, I'd like the, you can put out a link or whatever, but, because even like the bug out bag, we don't have a sales page for that.
I noticed because I was looking for it.
So yeah, no, we don't. We don't. I get asked about it all the time. Cause I'll do videos with like, and people ask, where do I get that? And it's like, we only do it in small batches. Like we're not a big company like Maxpedition or anything like that. Right. So like the only way to get it is through like our masterclass because
Okay, so they go to war. They go to your website. They go to Warrior Life. They'll be able to get access to this stuff.
They don't. So we run it like we run it. We run it for other people that want to.
Jeff, where the hell am I sending these people?
I know, right? I'll get you a link that will go out to it, and I would suggest using that link to go out to people because. Okay. Here's the thing: is like I want them to be in the right mindset, right? Like I want them just like when you have people that come to your training,
right?
You know, you want them coming in the mindset that they're serious about it, right?
Correct.
And so. And this kind of goes back to your like very first question, like the evolution of Warrior Life. It's like, I'm done dealing with talkers. Right. Like, I don't want the people that are just like gear focused. Like, no, it doesn't. It's not like you can't have my bag. Like, I don't want you to have it unless number one, I can get you to think differently.
Right.
So the masterclass really goes through like a different framework of a mindset that is pretty much completely the opposite of all the other shit that I find out there. And so like, I want people to understand the reason why. And then if you're on board with me, like take it. If you're not on board with me, don't waste it. We've got limited quantity. Like it's going to the people that really believe the way that I just told you to believe. So, so that's really, so that's a big part of it is that, what was your original question? I'm sorry, I'm old. I forget.
So with all that's going on today, I know there's a lot of shit.
Keeps me up at night. Yeah, gotcha.
Right.
Okay. So there are things that we talk about in that masterclass because that's the other thing that we run up against is like the reason why people don't plan is because it's too overwhelming. And I think for the most part, like they know things can happen, but they don't like deep down believe it'll happen. And there are things that could literally change life as we know it. Overnight.
Yep.
So the grid going down, we already know the enemy is inside of our power grid. The government has already said that. Like they've already admitted, like, and they've been asked, well, why haven't they just flipped us off? Like, you know, like literally like flipped the switch on us.
Right.
And our hackers, like our insane hacker team of the US government has said, we don't know. Like we know they're in there. We find them in there. They could literally turn us out, but we don't know why they haven't. The only thing we can think of is that the timing just isn't right.
Right.
And so then the question is, well, when is the timing right? Like as long as there's international trade and all these things are happening, like we kind of need each other.
Right.
But when they don't need us anymore, oh, you know what? Screw you. And they flip the switch. And so the grid going down, like it's still, our grid is still held together with bubble gum and duct tape.
Yeah.
So it's,
I don't
it's
like
very
the idea easy. Of it being centralized, but yeah, it's gotta be, you know, it's gotta be, the shit's gotta be fixed.
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, down in Texas, look what happened. I mean, that's,
exactly.
And that was like an independent section of the grid too. But I mean, it shows how dependent we are. I mean, who would think, I mean, like freaking Inuit. Not Eskimos, right? Like Inuit, like they can live inside of like, they don't have any freaking heaters, but you know, when people die in Texas from, it was too cold
was
outside,
cold.
Like they didn't have any, like that shows you the level of preparedness that 99% of the people out there even have. So the grid going down is a huge thing. That will shut down all resupply to cities and everything else. Another thing is bio warfare. So we just went through, you know, all this stuff with the pandemic and we're arguably still going through in certain areas or whatever, but, but this is just like scratching the surface. Like I've been screaming about a pandemic coming for the last 7 years.
Right.
And, nobody believed me.
You know, the tinfoil hat looks good now, Jeff.
It does. Right. I know. And, you know, and I get people that will, you know, it's like, oh, it's just a big hoax or whatever. And it's like, well, I've had friends that really did think it was a hoax and they've lost family members. Like I really thought it was a hoax and then it wasn't.
But even real or imagined, the shutdowns were real.
It doesn't matter.
Everything else, it doesn't matter. And the panic is real. We watch people fighting over who's wearing a mask and who's not. You know, you're not going to have a debate on the efficacy of masks.
Right.
You know, when somebody's freaking out.
Right.
So yeah, I mean that.
But like I tell people, like I always look at the, it can always plan for 50% worse than the last worst case scenario. I learned that in the flood that my town went through because we'd had floods, but everybody said, oh, we've been through them for, you know, decades. And it's like, then we got a 1,000-year flood that came through that was worse than any of those. So I always look at, okay, well, we've had a pandemic. We know we've lost people. I get it. The number isn't, you know, it's right. all over the place whatever. Right. But people have died because of it.
Sure.
And, you know, don't think that there haven't already been, you know, we've worried about or we've debated whether this came from a lab. Well, let's say that it did. There is all kinds of nasties in labs all over the place. And don't mistake for a minute that our true enemies that just want to see our downfall aren't trying to weaponize Ebola or whatever it is that they can try and just get where they can release it into a water system, into the air, whatever it is that they can just let it go because they've seen what it's done to our country. Now, on that note, our response to this was a shit show from the very beginning. Yeah. And we have just basically bailed out, you know, millionaires, businesses that didn't need it. We just handed out money.
Yep.
We don't have the money. What are we going to do? I'll print some more money. So economic collapse, you know, we've been saying it's going to come for even before the pandemic. Now we're starting to see the elements of inflation. Now we're going to get the super inflation. Now we're looking at, you know, when is the bomb going to finally burst? And so economic collapse is another thing that I know when it happens, it's going to, you know, you know, billionaires are doing stuff with their money. They're buying farms. They're buying bunkers. I'm not saying people need to do that, but what if your area like loses resupply? And I don't care if you're in the suburbs, you don't have to be in like high crime urban centers for that to happen.
Right.
When Hurricane Katrina happened, they bust everybody from the inner city out to the suburbs and out to other places. And, they stayed like they just brought the crime with them. It's like, hey, it's kind of cool out here.
Right.
So, you know, so those are some of the things that are like kind of the big ones for me that you need to prepare for.
Yeah. I mean, even looking at what, you know, what's happened, you know, when you're thinking about, okay, you know, you shelter in place, you shut down. I mean, even like basic hunting skills and trying to harvest and butcher and things like that. I'm like, I know me a couple and a handful of people that I know that can do it. But, you know, other than that, I mean, these are also, you know, things that, you know, pop into my head and, you know, just shit that you acquired growing up. I mean, you know, even knowing how to fish for crying out loud. Right. So, I mean, there's, you know, some basic things that, you know, that everyone can do. Again, you know, what's happening now, if you asked me 3 years ago, you know, could, I hate to use the term because it's cliche, but could Nazi Germany happen in America? I would have said, you know, no, you're out of your mind. But now it's like, you know, between vaxxed and unvaxxed and, you know, right and left and, you know, all the lunacy that entails. I mean, you know, you've got, even if you get, I mean, civil unrest is happening. It's not imagined. I mean, defunding the police, I mean, New York City, I'm right outside New York. You know, there's still like the sections that were bad just got worse.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, there's areas you can still go into. It's not like a war zone, but crime's up 185%. Oh, murders. I mean, it's like, you know, people are like, you know, getting. I mean, even the crap that just happened in the subway. It's just one thing. So you know, again, like we keep going back and I think we keep circling back to this is that people just feeling like the obstacles of to prepare is overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And in reality, it's what we're saying. It's not, I mean, you can start very simply. Like if someone didn't do anything and we'll finish up here. So if someone didn't do anything, where's the best place for somebody to start, man?
It's a great point. It's one of the things that we do cover in the masterclass is because that's the biggest biggest obstacle to people is procrastination. And the reason why they procrastinate, I mean, I've asked a lot of people that have talked a lot about it or read a lot about it or watch videos and things like that. Like, well, how, you know, do you have X amount of food available? And it's like, well, no, but I'm going to someday and I need to get that going. It's like, someday is not an actual day.
Right.
And so, you know, what I tell people is that, their two biggest complaints or their biggest procrastinators are, there's so much I have to prepare against, you know, grid down blackouts, pandemics, nuclear, like all these different things. Like, I don't know where to begin. So you freeze. Right. And then it's like, okay, well, I go online and then this guy says to do it this way. And he's pitching the camouflage backpack. And Jeff, you're saying do it this way. And you've got your blue backpack. And it's like, well, who do I trust? Like, who knows what they're doing? Like this, I've seen, I know the guy, so I don't, I try not, I don't never name him, but he's Navy SEAL and he had a backpack out there and he was selling it. And I'm like, you would never wear that backpack. Like, I know you, right. This is for a buck. You would never wear that backpack because you know you'd be targeted. And it's like, right. So who do you trust? Like, if you're in, like, oh, the Navy SEAL said to buy this, so I'm going to buy this one. So
right.
I tell people, the very first place that you start, and this is going to seem weird because it's kind of the opposite of what everybody is typically doing. Because I said earlier, most of the time, your home is going to be the best place for you to stay because right. you can fortify it. Like, right, you right. have, you can store more food there. Obviously, you can use better weapons. You've got everybody together. Like, it's most of the time, it is going to be the best place for you to be until it's not.
Right.
And then all those, you know, your 50 caliber sniper rifle and everything else, you know, you can fit stuff into a vehicle, but if you waited too long or whatever, now you've got a problem. So again, I always look to what is the last, like, where do we start from? And in executive protection, we always started with the safe room because that was going to be our last, like if all else fails, yeah. we're going to go to that. Fall and then you start there. Building yeah. out the layers around that. We do the same thing in survival. You start with your bug out bag. Because if all else goes wrong, if that's all you've got, then that's going to, you've got 3 days of food. You've got a way to filter water. You've got, you know, security, you've got those things with you. And like, that's where you start. And even if you didn't have other food in your house, you still at least have 3 days, you know, you got 3 days inside of your bug out bag. And then if right. you need to leave, you grab it and go.
Right.
So, and there's other elements to that that I go sure. over in the masterclass of right. like how you actually do those things, but that's where it starts. Like you, even if, and that's why people say, well, I'm not, you know, why the hell would I go out into the wasteland with a bug out bag? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stay at home. Most of those people are probably have poor health. Right. Don't, you know, not, and I'm not talking about walking 100 miles, you know, right. off into the wasteland, you know, for looking for zombies. So,
right.
But you've got to have something, even if it's just going to the local shelter.
Yeah.
They're just going to hand you a grocery bag. That's all they're going to give right. you to hold your stuff in or whatever. So right. just being able to have that with you means it's easier to carry. If it's, you know, if it's comfortable, there's things that even if you're older, we talk about ways that people that are older have mobility problems, ways that yeah. they can still have a bug out bag, use their system and everything. So that's where we tell people to start. Start with your yeah. 3 days of the must-have gear inside of a bug out bag.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Very cool, man. Well, again, it was great to spend some time with you again. I mean, dude, when's the first time we talked? Probably 2007, I'm going to say.
Gosh. Yeah. It was back when, I mean, Carl was still around and everything. It was yeah. just,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a long way around.
Yeah. And then we just continue to circle around each other and circle yeah. back. But we're still both here.
Thanks to our mad ninja taekwondo skills.
Right. Of course. So,
yeah.
So look, man, we'll have details for the masterclass in the description. We'll put it out for everybody. Dude, again, thanks for coming on. Again, always a pleasure. Great to connect. And yeah, that's it. Everybody, thanks for joining. If you're listening to the recording, much appreciated. You know, like and subscribe, all that fun, usual nonsense that people say on YouTube. And until next time, train honestly.
You've been listening to the Warrior Life Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the show. You can help us spread the mission of self-reliance and self-protection when you rate us. And leave us a comment wherever you enjoy these podcasts. And don't forget to check out our posts and videos on our social media channels. You'll see a full directory when you visit our website at www.warriorlife.com. We'll see you next time. This has been the Warrior Life Podcast. Prepare. Train. Survive.